Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And what do we do next? I always forget what we do at this point. I guess we could do a disclaimer or disclosure. The Personal Wealth Coach, in addition to being... Are you unusually loud or something?
Yeah, and my volumes are turned way down, so you may be just blaring out.
Okay, well, I don't think I am. This gauge here says I'm not.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
The Personal Wealth Coach, in addition to being a radio program, is also the name of an investment advisory firm, a wealth management firm, in Salado, Texas, that happens to be purely, not coincidentally, registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. So if you if you wish to find the regulatory authority responsible for us for reining in our foolishness.
Right. They are the ones.
That would be the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. Now, I don't know who specifically there is responsible. To suggest that a government agency has a specific person that's responsible, particularly when it's a commission and they don't actually have...
You can ask me. Who's responsible?
Who's responsible?
I don't recall that senator.
Which senator do you not recall?
I don't recall that senator.
Oh, okay.
Easy answer.
Yeah, it's... anyway, one of those people up there anyway. So if you have a complaint, that's who to register with. You could call them up and say that we're really cool dudes too, but that's all right. I don't think they'd listen to you. They don't like it when people say good things. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. And if you'd like to give us a call in here today, presuming that where you are today is Saturday, August 23rd, you're certainly welcome to do so. If it's not August 23rd, the chances of our answering you fall off dramatically. Catastrophically, one could say. But the telephone numbers, if today is Saturday, August 23rd, for you is 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
I can't figure out exactly what I'm doing wrong here that I have to have these cranked up songs.
Yeah, you've got your master volume turned all the way up and your headset volume turned way down. So,
well, the master volume is set right where it always is, and this thing is not pegging out, which means that that's one of the things I'm looking at here is it's not pegging out, which means that we're really only putting out a limited signal. This is the final arbiter of what goes out.
Right,
so.
Right.
Well, as usual, we're having a lot of fun with the high-tech equipment here at KTEM.
Got the other thing. You usually have your microphone turned so that it's looking, facing directly into your mouth. When you turn your head away, it doesn't peg out. When you're speaking directly into the microphone, it definitely is pegging. Try it.
All right, well, let me...
There you go. It also sounds like a Klingon vessel approaching.
Right.
You can hear that.
Is that better? Is that a more acceptable level to
Yeah, that's good right there.
Okay, that's
perfect.
Good. All right. So, what happened this week?
I believe we started the week, depending on culture versus calendar, either on a Sunday or a Monday. That was followed immediately by another day, depending again on the culture. It could have been a Monday or a Tuesday. And we could continue all through the week and cover all the news in a very easy and summation fashion that would have everybody knowing exactly what happened from one day to the next.
Actually,
as far as the calendar goes,
probably ought to talk about things of economic interest.
Well, I think everybody is aware that the calendar is of extreme importance to the economy. Without that, we wouldn't know which day the news was going on.
You got a point. Okay. In today's Walls, no. In today's Barron's, it notes that the Dow and the S&P score their biggest gains of the summer. For the week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up a little over 2%, and the S&P 500 was up about a little over 1.7%. For a year-to-date, the Dow is up 2.56, the S&P 500 up 7.58. And for 52 weeks, in other words, from a year ago this week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up about 13%, and the S&P 500 is up close to 20%. Now,
I've got to throw in some bad news.
With all the negative noise out there, it's hard to imagine that we've just had a 20% year in effect.
Mm-hmm.
And the sell in May and going away isn't working too well because the S&P 500, for example, closed out the week at a record.
Oh, well, you've been talking about all these rises in over a long period of time, so I'm going to bring in some negativity here. The index that's followed for crude oil is down for those same periods. So I just thought
it's actually up.
It's up what?
Because the crude oil is actually deep under the ground.
Oh,
and
yeah,
they pump it out.
Yeah,
so
there's
it has
more
to come
of it.
Up to be in the index.
Right. There's more of it in the up place than in the down
than there
place.
Used to be because we're pumping it up.
And gold has been flat for the past year or so, which
that's
means,
right.
You know, it's unless you make it rounded, it stays flat usually.
And
coins are flat and bars are flat.
It's down about 50% from its peaks when the gold advertisements on the television and radio were
more like
most common.
35%, a little over that, 35-40%.
Well, yeah, I didn't actually look at the numbers. I just read the article today about from its peak, gold down about 50%.
I think at the peak.
Oh, no, not gold, not gold. Gold mining shares.
Yeah, gold mining shares.
Gold mining shares, which tend to do a pretty good job of forecasting gold.
Right. Gold was up to probably at its peak somewhere right around 1850, and it's now at about 1280. So it's about a 35-40% drop.
Okay.
And it's been
down
there for a long time.
Sort of. And this is one of the things that I was thinking about a while back, that we need to throw this little caveat in there. Unless you are a person who trades gold in the tens of millions of dollars,
you don't get that price.
If you had bought gold at the top of the market, I think that was the article I read the other day. If you'd bought gold at the top of the market and you tried to sell it today as a retail purchaser and seller of gold, you would have a 50% loss.
Yeah, and this is a quick one. I just said 1850 was the peak, roughly 1850 was the peak of the gold market. If you were buying as a retail customer, if you went in to buy a bar of gold or even 30 bars of gold, you were much more likely to spend around $2,100 a bar. And if you went to sell that same set of bars of gold and you went in to do it today, you wouldn't sell it at $1,280. You would sell it closer to $1,000 per bar or per ounce.
So you actually would have a more than 50% loss.
Right. Okay. And that's just because the people that are buying and selling it from you and to you are actually making a profit every time it's done.
Do you suppose that might have something to do with the advertisements they have?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it could be that those advertisements are paid for by a charitable organization that's just interested in getting the news out to people. But for some reason, I don't think that's the case.
But those advertisements are always warning people, are always telling people, this is your opportunity to get wealthy. Obviously, the companies are only interested in the purchasers of gold getting wealthy.
Well, of course, that's what they're saying on the air.
And avoiding loss.
Right. That's what they say. It must be true.
So, okay.
Just like the internet. If it's on the internet, it must be true.
That has an awful lot to do with reality.
One other bad piece of news. On Friday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 0.22%. You were talking about it being up for the week. I just thought I'd throw in some bad news, that the earth-shaking drop of 0.22%.
Well, you know, you have a point there. The S&P 500 was only up 1.7. We can say, you know, that's terrible with the Dow up 2.2.
Well, you see, it was up 1.9 before it dropped down to 1.7 up.
So I voted against that before I voted for it?
Exactly.
Got it.
Right.
Okay. That makes very good.
The reason why the markets, this is great, the headline here, markets wobble as Russian convoy enters Ukraine. If you call a drop of 0.22%, 0.22%, that is a less than a quarter of 1%. If you could cut a penny.
Well, it was wobbling because of the empty trucks.
Right. The empty trucks that were entering Ukraine to bring moral support and aid to the rebels.
Well, and that is folks, if you haven't read these stories, one of the more fascinating things to me is that reporters who were following the trucks across country, because they were driving off the roads, could hear things rattling around inside these white Russian trucks, and it was clear that whatever was in there was sliding from one side of the truck to the other, and watching the way the trucks traveled, it was very clear that most of the trucks were mostly empty.
Well, this was covered by the BBC as well as Vice, because they actually got to inspect a couple of these trucks, and what they found is about half of the trucks that they inspected, they didn't inspect them all, half of the trucks they inspected were empty. And the Russians responded, well, that's in case a truck breaks down, we can move the stuff over to the other trucks.
Well, did you hear one hypothesis was that the Russians intend to attack the convoy, blame it on the Ukrainians, and use it as an excuse to invade?
Well, I think that's an old excuse at this point. It's not one that they need. I think because the convoy entered and nothing happened, and I mean, I was thinking more like Trojan horse type things. Maybe they're going to load it up at the last minute, but they've been surrounded by the media the whole time. The Russian media, this is excellent. I've mentioned this in the past. Vice.com has some really good coverage of overseas issues and really horrible coverage of domestic issues. Very, extremely, almost disgusting reporting of domestic issues. But their reporters are watching the Russian reporters interview the truck drivers. And this is the way a Russian interview goes. So this is my version of the translations. Okay, before we turn on the cameras, what I'm going to ask you is, how do you feel about delivering your goods? And you should tell me you're very excited about delivering your goods. And when we ask you about how you feel about having to wait to deliver, you should say you're impatient and that you just really want to help the people of Ukraine. Okay, camera's going on. How do you feel about helping the people of Ukraine? Oh, I'm very excited to be helping the people of Ukraine. Are you impatient at all? I'm very impatient about not being able to deliver my... This is being videoed from the side as these interviews are going on. It's just cracking me up. It's the truck drivers look a little bit uncomfortable. But, you know, if you think about it from the reporter's point of view, it makes the interview a lot easier if you know the whole conversation before it happens.
You don't think reporters normally do that?
I don't think so, actually. I've seen enough reporters that just put their foot so far in their mouth that they have to get CPR done to get their foot out. It's a Heimlich maneuver type scenario. Yeah, I think Russian reporters have an easy job.
Well, now that we've aired a little bit of bad news to balance things out.
Right.
I guess we aired some bad news.
Well, that was sort of bad in that the Russians have sent trucks into Ukraine.
And NATO is saying they have mounting evidence. I'm not sure what a mounting evidence
is. Mounting evidence is actually looking at Russians.
Russian artillery is operating inside Ukraine, firing on Ukrainian troops, and that the Russian military is operating inside Ukraine, fighting the Ukrainian troops.
Okay, so I'm going to give some comparison here, because
yes,
that sounds like more bad news.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it does sound like bad news. The Russians are involved in the Ukrainian conflict.
With the fact that the Russian army is inside Ukraine,
right,
fighting the Ukrainian army.
Right.
But officially is not.
But the Ukrainian...
The good news is that Putin denies they're there.
Right. Well, that's true. If he came out and said, yes, they're actually there, that would be a bad thing. He would actually have to completely invade at that point.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to sort of invade.
The Russians being there isn't helping the Ukrainian rebels.
It isn't?
They're losing ground in every direction. I mean, they're just being completely swamped at this point by the Ukrainian official military.
Which pretty much didn't exist a few months ago.
Right. It's mostly volunteer types. They are not very well trained, and the Russian military is supporting the rebels, who are also volunteers and not very well trained. But the fact that the Russian military is there supporting them and it's not helping them very much is an interesting factor in that if we just go to a slightly different area of the world and we look over at a group that went from Syria into Iraq with almost no resistance, just running over everybody, and the Americans don't put troops on the ground, they just kind of target a couple of things, and suddenly the war is going the other direction. The dam in Mosul has been retaken by the Kurdish forces. The Iraqi forces have taken back over a huge chunk of land. Mm-hmm. It just goes to show that as much as we think of Russia still, you know, they're making noises like they were Cold War. The media is saying, you know, this is the worst level since the Cold War. Or our relationship is so bad. We've continued to advance since the Cold War. They still have their top-of-the-line jets are the ones that were developed before the Cold War ended. They have some minor advances in, they put another letter at the end, and it's usually because they changed an aerofoil or something. They don't have stealth. They're not using drones. They don't know how to use drones, which is shocking to me because we can go to Radio Shack and buy a drone here.
You don't have to go to Radio Shack. You can go to Walmart.
Right. Just go online and hit the thing and it shows up on your porch. I mean, drone is just what we would normally call a hobbyist's airplane at this point.
Yeah.
And Russians are not using them. The Iranians are not using them. They pretend to use them and they act like it's a very advanced thing, but they're operating in the same radio waves, you know, one signal air. You know, basically, in a jamming situation, we just turn one channel up to blast, and all of their drones fall out of the sky. So I'm using this as a comparison to say the bad news of Ukraine is just showing, again, the reason why the Soviet Union fell. We invaded Kuwait and Iraq at the first Gulf War, and Iraq was supported by Russian advisors. And they had the best Russian equipment. And the army of Iraq at the time was a hardened, battle-tested army that had just fought the Iranians not too long before. Mm-hmm. They were well-trained and well-equipped by the Russians. The Russians were on the ground. And we just rolled right over them. And then not very long after that, the Soviet Union fell. And there's a real...
Now, you're talking, cause-effect you realize that you're now talking ancient history.
It's very ancient. This is before some of our listeners were alive.
Yes. And a lot of people don't know what this
Gulf War business
Soviet
is. What is the
Union.
Soviet Union? What is that? Is that the guy with the thing on his head?
The Union of Soviet Socialist Republics that was really scary, and yet we weren't too scared of them.
I was speaking to a pretty intellectual group of young people. By young people, I mean early 20s,
mm-hmm.
and was talking about the Cold War relations. And they kept coming up with, well, that guy with the thing on his head would say stuff to us. And I expect they mean Gorbachev, but it was really hard for me to figure out the thing on his head was the birthmark. Right. I thought they were talking about a hat for a while. No, it's actually on his head. What is it?
It's an alien.
Right, it's an alien. So,
you know, I wonder if they're going to say that about Rick Perry one of these days.
The thing on his head?
The guy with the thing on his head.
That's hair.
Oh.
For us, that's the thing on his head. We're bald.
Well, if you look around at people younger than Rick Perry and younger than me...
which are most of the people at this point.
Right. The vast majority of men do not have much of a thing on their head.
It's true.
They've taken after us. And remove the hair from the top of their head.
We're trendsetters.
Yes, obviously. Well, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. And if you have any questions, comments, or thoughts about anything to do with the economy, and today is August 23rd, you're certainly welcome to give us a call at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
I have some good news.
Oh, dear.
I know you tried to turn the bad news into good news. You know, that's one of the problems that we
have
here.
I have a lot of good news, too, which is hard.
We have all this stuff going on. There's this meeting going on in a hole. It's a holy meeting.
Mm-hmm.
The Jackson Hole meeting.
Yeah, well, I think Jackson Hole, isn't that the name of, like, a hideout for some bandits?
I think that's Hole in the Wall.
Oh, that's Hole in the Wall. Sundance Film Festival's
Jackson
there.
Hole is where the bankers go hide out.
That's
except,
what I said. That's where the bandits go to
this
hide
year,
out.
This year, the bankers weren't invited.
This year, no bandits and bankers were invited?
That's right. That's really interesting. The official government types all showed up. They invited leaders from the AFL-CIO, but they didn't invite any CEOs or senior executives from any of the big investment banks.
So it was a workers' meeting.
I don't know what it was, but normally it's the other way around where they invite the big investment bank CEOs and so on. Well, they didn't invite them this year. Now, it might have had something to do with the record levels of fines for criminal activity that the investment banks are getting hit with on an almost daily basis.
Right.
Might have something that inviting representatives from criminal organizations. You know, there was a time when the AFL-CIO was the criminal organization.
There's still moments of that today.
Okay.
I mean.
Anyway, but there was an interesting report that came out of the Boston Consulting Group, which I know you probably never heard of, but they produced some very well-respected studies. And it, for the last several years, they have tracked the competitiveness of global producers in manufacturing. And what they came out with, this is in the Wall Street Journal, by the way, August 22nd. They came out with a report that is a little bit surprising. Apparently, China is quickly losing its edge, as are many of the historic low-cost producers where we would shuffle manufacturing over to them because it was less expensive. For example, it is now more expensive to have something manufactured in Brazil by far than it is in the United States.
Right. Just ask Elon Musk.
Really?
Yeah. The Tesla folks, I want to talk about SpaceX later.
They set up in Brazil and are
no.
really sad they did so?
No, they've set up in the United States.
Oh, okay.
But in the United States, they're able to produce the cars that they're making at a much lower rate as far as cost
yeah.
per
and
because of robots.
This is the
drones.
This is one of the fascinating things. Since the
Great Recession. Right.
I think we should rename it the Grape Recession or something.
The Grape Recession?
Grape, yes.
We can have the Grapes of Wrath.
We could,
and
yeah.
And the Grape
work.
Recession.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, as you know, we've been talking about we talked about during the recession the way businesses were using the slowdown to purchase capital-intensive big-ticket items. Long-term items that they purchase and use for many, many years. And we said that's an indication when the recovery comes, it's going to come big time.
Man, we're geeks.
And I know that nobody remembers that because that was like 5 years ago.
And those are words that most people are not
anyway,
used to hearing. But that's what we were saying.
The most cost-effective places to manufacture things in the world, two countries rise to the top of the heap, and they are phenomenally, apparently, ahead of everybody else, including China and India. Guess which two countries it is?
Oh, Uruguay.
No, I'm not.
No.
Did you just call me a Guay?
Uzbekistan.
No. None of those.
No, I'm
sorry. Matter of fact, this is kind of funny.
Starting with the U's. So, okay, United States.
The
there
Eastern
we go.
European countries have fallen. Russia, by the way, is one of the most expensive places to manufacture anything right now.
Right.
For lots of reasons.
Lots
and we're
of
not
reasons.
Just talking about they pay to their people a lot. It's just getting things to and from and the risk of having it seized.
Right.
But
the United
Mexico
States and Mexico
and the United States are the two most cost-effective places to have something manufactured in the world. As a matter of fact, it leads to some questions because Germany historically has been a major manufacturing center, but their cost of doing business has been steadily rising and rising at such a rate that it's going to, you know, presuming they don't find some way to turn that around, it will have a major long-term impact on their economy. They are a very export-driven economy, and they're going, it's actually cheaper in Europe, even though they have European Union, no tariffs, anything else, it's actually cheaper in Europe to buy a given piece of manufactured equipment from the United States than it is from Germany.
There's a piece of information here that I think is pretty important. Their productivity rate has been steadily declining in Germany for the past year or so.
It's because they're getting old.
they're getting old.
But there's another reason, too.
There are laws being passed to protect the worker.
Right.
And that's, I'm not saying that protection of workers is a bad thing. Please don't get me wrong there. I think if you're in an unsafe working condition, then you should make it safe. If you're being paid at a level that doesn't represent the risk that you're taking for that job,
then that's not a good thing. And some regulation is required. You know, the EPA, as much as it gets in the way of business, it's a good thing. We don't want to be killing our workers in the process of doing this thing. We want a good wage for the workers for the price. To some extent, that's covered by the market, but in certain areas, coal mining, for instance, it's not. If that's where you live, that's what you do. So having some regulation on safety there is really important. Having a week off a year as a regulated subject, no. What if you want to work that week? You know, that lowers productivity. There are people that, I'm going to say this with a great deal of affection, I cannot say how much this means to us. We have people at our office that almost refuse to take vacations because they don't want to. They want to work. And we pay them on their vacations. Go take a vacation. And they say, I'm going to work. I feel bad when I'm on vacation. And we go, I don't know why you feel that way. I'm very glad that you like to work. But please, occasionally take vacations. In Germany, it's the other way around. The government comes in and says, you must take a vacation. In France, it's far worse than that. In France, it's basically if you don't take your vacations, you get fined, and so does the government, so does the employment that you're working for. Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to go down that path too far.
Well, let me put a couple of negatives in here too. Okay. There's a study that was presented at the Jackson Hole meeting of the Federal Reserve that said that we potentially are losing our dynamicism in the United States, our workplace dynamicism. I think it's an interesting word. I had actually used that word before today, so it's my new word for the day. To give an example, first, we have an aging workforce, so they're less likely to move from job to job. Secondly, we have, over the last several decades, dramatically increased the number of people who own houses rather than rent. When you own a house, you have to sell the darn thing before you can go someplace, which slows things down. But there's another big issue that probably is near and dear to many of our listeners' hearts. The fraction of workers required to hold a government-issued license to do their jobs rose from less than 5% in the 1950s to 29% in 2008. If we add in people who don't have to hold a license to do a job, but require a government certification to do their job, 38% of the workers in the United States to have a government certification or license in order to do whatever it is they're doing. And when I say government, not necessarily federal. For example, in the 1950s, a person could come and fix the plumbing in your house without a government certification in the state.
Right.
And state and local government certifications and licenses. They can't today. Same's true of electricians. You go down this list of things.
They say these need to have standards
A lot of them make, in matter of fact, I would even go so far as to say most of them make sense. But when you get to 38%, that effectively bars entry, the kind of entry we had coming out of World War II where people would leave the armed forces and immediately go to work doing something. Isn't there anymore, because in many cases they have to go to school, they have to pay out some money, they have to then get some kind of certification that they know what they're doing before they do it. Now, we burn down a lot fewer houses.
Yeah, that's true.
We destroy a lot fewer cars.
There's a lot less lead in the drinking water.
So we've made some real improvements, but we've also had a decline in what's called dynamicism. In other words, when you have a change in the economy, and we have had a major change in the economy since 2000, to move from doing something that is no longer technically worth paying for because it can be done by automation of some kind, to doing a job that is by definition going to be more skilled requires training and in many cases certification. Most companies now require some kind of certification for somebody to work on their computers.
Right.
I can't imagine why, but they do.
You can't imagine why?
No, I mean, why don't you just let anybody come in off the street and tinker with your computers?
I don't know why you wouldn't. I mean, there's some homeless people that I'm sure could immediately get some jobs just coming in and
taking computers.
Taking the computers apart and selling the parts somewhere.
Right, or something like that. Yeah. But so well, there's actually a shortage of homeless people too, so that's a problem too. But at any rate,
well, we gotta work on that.
We've got an economy that is, and I read a series of articles summarizing papers presented at Jackson Hole, and there's the big message that I pulled out of that was that the same thing we've been saying here, and that is that in the recession, a lot of jobs that previously were being done by what we call semi-skilled workers, somebody who's very, very qualified to do a very, very specific thing but not qualified to do anything else, the specific thing they were qualified to do is no longer available for them to do, and they are in many cases old enough that it is very, very difficult for them to A, learn new skills, and B, then become employed, because there's only a limited number of years they're going to remain employed. That is one of the things that has slowed down this recovery. It's a major differential. Another paper was presented, by the way, that says it's no big gig. It's no big thing. We've seen this before. It is normal. And everybody, you know, everybody's worried, freaking out that the whole economy is going to tank because of this issue of a large number of people who have been unemployed more than a year who really would like to work.
Right.
And they said, look back to the first part of the 20th century, look back to the 19th century. Anytime you have a major upheaval in technology,
we call it industrial revolution or information revolution. Those things exist. And when the tractor came along and replaced somebody walking behind mules, you can do a lot more work with a tractor than you can with teams of mules and a person behind them that has to be.
And what we have is a tremendous number of displaced workers, many of whom are older. And it's going to take a while to work through this issue. But what they're saying is, not only have we had this happen in the American economy multiple times.
And let me just throw in a piece of history here. This is when the first piece of Social Security was put in the early 20th century, when the older farmers were not able to change what they knew how to do to go and work in a factory. They didn't know how to read. They couldn't figure out how to go from tilling soil to making shoes, because that's a skilled job. And that meant that they didn't have anything to do for a living, and they started starving to death. So Social Security was put in place to protect people that were old and no longer had a job that could sustain them. Right at the same time that we were increasing life expectancy, because we were finding that if you wash your hands before you poke somebody with a needle, it makes them not die, and things like that.
Mm.
So you throw that all together, and what we're seeing now...
I haven't actually experienced that.
What, dying?
No, the necessity to wash my hands before poking someone with a needle.
I wouldn't recommend going...
Because they don't go around poking people with needles.
You would be losing some of your dynamicism, because you would have to train to be the proper registrations to do that.
A needle poker.
Right.
Right. Which is, by the way, requires a government certification.
Yeah, you've got to get some fleas involved somewhere, or flea bots or something or another.
Right.
Yeah. So what we're seeing, this is the echo that I'm bringing that up. The Social Security now has become bigger than it needed to be, but this is still important stuff. So you were in the middle of explaining how we've seen this before, and I wanted to throw that.
Well, not only have we seen it before, but what the paper points out, we've seen it multiple times before, but each time when we see this event, the certain characteristics associated with it, which we are experiencing right now, we have come out of there a much more healthy, much more productive, much more wealthy economy on the other side of these events, and we have done so very consistently. And there is no evidence that even vaguely suggests that we will not do so. I want to throw one other thing in here. We've got to do some commercials. Same August 21st, Wall Street Journal. Why are jobless claims falling so fast? Article.
Gravity.
We have new jobless claims. That is, people who have been laid off, who apply for unemployment insurance.
Right.
As at the lowest numerical level. Now, remember, there's a lot of more people in the workforce now than there were, let's say, in 2002. It is lower now than it has been at any point since, well, actually, it's down to the same level, a little below the level that it was in 2007.
Which is the peak.
We're hitting record low for several decades jobless claims. In other words, there's a record low number of people being laid off who are applying for unemployment insurance. Now, some of the people who are being laid off obviously are not applying for unemployment insurance because they're just retiring.
Right. Or they're going on to another job immediately.
Yes. But that when you net all that out, if they're going right on to another job immediately, that's a good thing too. But the point is we have a 6.2% unemployment rate,
yeah,
but a record low jobless, a record low new layoffs. Those generally do not go together, but in this case they are going together. And what it boils down to is companies are retaining their existing employees more than they have in the past because the training level of those employees is much higher than it has been in the past. So they have a big investment in them. They don't want to get rid of them. Secondly, they're reluctant to hire new people who don't know how to do the job.
Right.
Now, you'd say, well, that all makes perfectly good sense. Why haven't they done it in the past? Well, in the past, they didn't have as much invested in their existing employees.
Well, in certain industries, yes.
And they could hire people and train them quicker because the skill level to do a given job has gone up.
Right. What we're seeing is that the skilled area of our economy is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And we can compare what's happened to that area of the economy in the past. When layoffs have happened and they retool and they make for more productivity and they train their people, it's a lot less likely to be fired from there until a new, completely new wave of technology comes along, which is what we saw, for instance, this is a great one, with the automobile manufacturing industry. That was a highly skilled job set. And because it was highly skilled and there was not a lot of competition for those positions, because the people in those positions had to be really good at what they did, their wages went up regardless of how much better they worked. If they weren't working as well as they had been a year before, they still got a raise. The unions got involved with this. Technology came along and said it was easier to train the people to do it or to use a robot to do it. And that caused the whole industry to fail. But when it has been rising from the ashes, it's coming up as a better industry now. We are producing better cars by far than we were before.
Yeah, that's one of the things. If you think the United States manufacturing capability is going downhill, or the world manufacturing capability, however you want to look at it, you may look at a Toyota and say that's a Japanese car, but in fact the majority of Toyotas are still manufactured in the United States, so it's an American car. If you look at the fact that Jeff McClure, who is really not all that old.
Speak for yourself. Well, you did.
I did. But I'm old enough that I was born before the middle of the last century. I can remember when there was really absolutely no need for anything over 99,000 miles on the odometer of a car, because no car ever made it over 99,000 miles, with a rare, rare exception. They would make it to 100,000, the thing would roll back to zero, and that was really, really odd. Now, cars with a couple of 100,000 miles on them
are not abnormal. All right. We've been loading them up with good news. We've got commercials to play, but let me hit this piece.
Eek, we only got 15 minutes left in the hour.
Let me hit this piece before we go to commercials. We have talked in the past about 10 to 15 years from now having a pretty big crisis.
Yes.
And we were just talking
I'm
about...
I'm looking forward to it, as a matter of fact.
We were just talking about technology being a part of every crisis as it comes along and it replaces the way people are doing business. We're beginning to see the pieces of that technology coming out right now. 3D printing is...
Oh, yeah, and I want to talk about that.
Yeah, that's something, and we'll talk about it more after the break and then probably more next hour.
Yeah. Larry Summers came out with another study, by the way.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about it more after the break.
Okay. Well, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and we're talking about big stuff today. If you'd like to interject something or give us a question or something, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff
and Jake
McClure. You know we're starring?
We are...
Stirring.
Stirring.
Probably, I should say, stirring Jeff and Jake McClure. I should say that. Stirring.
We do stir. I don't know about the star business.
We could say rabble-rousing. Chief rabble-rousers are...
We are definitely not plasma balls.
We're going to work on this.
Those are...
Starring.
Starring things.
Yeah. I wanted to mention this thing, that this paper that Lawrence Summers, who, for all of his warts and pimples, is definitely a great man when it comes to his...
Not very PC to talk about warts and pimples. People's warts and pimples.
Well, these are metaphorical warts and pimples.
Oh, okay. All right, that's fine.
For all of his metaphorical warts and pimples, and he has a few, he's still a brilliant strategic economic thinker. And he published a paper that literally had papers being presented at Jackson Hole at this meeting that we're talking about it. I mean, that's the thing that happens. It was actually based, and it was an essay in the Wall Street Journal last month on it, and it's one of the big things that we're going to see, very much like the 1920s and 30s. What's coming is a very much a repeat of the early part of the 20th century, and we're just not prepared for it. There's a lot of things, I think, that a lot of people are not prepared for. And this is it. In case you haven't noticed, the number of people working at cash registers in grocery stores is shrinking. The number of people...
But the people themselves are growing.
I don't know. I've noticed that they're not all that big. but the number of the major employment source in the United States, about 60%, Of employment.
Just as a side note there, that statement that I just made about the people growing has bearing to this conversation. We'll get to it in a minute.
I recognize that they're getting bigger.
That has bearing to the conversation. We'll come back to
right,
it.
Right. I recognize what you were trying to say, but actually I've seen a lot shorter people working there recently, so in my experience. What we're seeing, for instance, we've talked about the fact that Google now has cars driving in California, quite a few cars driving
in
California.
And elsewhere,
with no drivers. Well, there's a driver, but the driver doesn't do anything. We will see in the next decade a tremendous surge of driverless cars. Now, I want you to think about that just a moment in light of the fact that if you've ever taken a taxi somewhere, that just puts all the taxi drivers out of business.
Yeah, what we're seeing with Uber, for those of you who don't know what Uber is, it's basically you can use an app, become a member of Uber, you've got a minor amount of training that you've got to do, and then you act like a taxi in your car
right,
in major urban areas. And that's destabilizing.
Temporary.
This is the sort of destabilization we see before the jobs just go away.
And the number of jobs, and this is what Lawrence Summers looked at, and the essay in the Wall Street Journal by Lawrence Summers was about, but David Autor presented at Jackson Hole that we have a serious challenge that will face the United States in the next several decades, and that is, where do we employ people in a world where entry-level jobs are dominated by computerized systems rather than bringing people in? And what we have is an orientation in the country that's moving right now, of a trend. Entry-level jobs are disappearing.
Yeah.
And high-tech jobs are multiplying, which requires that we have a lot more specifically, carefully trained, high-quality people to get into those jobs. And of course, then there's the backside of that, where we have a lot of, because the federal government will fund almost anybody who is able to breathe to run a school, you have a lot of people who are raising huge debts on themselves to not be skilled enough
what you're saying
to get a job.
Lots of student loans and no actual skills to get a job.
Right.
Right.
So we've got a disconnect there.
And I mentioned 3D printing. You were mentioning driverless cars. They're the same thing. 3D printing is basically driverless cars for manufacturing. Where and people say, well, why would you want to spend $600 to have a 3D printer? Why would you ever want to do that? $600,
you can get it for $600.
You can get them for $200, but they're really small.
Okay.
And people are saying, why would you want to do that? It's just like a toy. Why would you do that? That's the same thing they said about the personal computer.
Oh, yes.
It's and this is, you're going to listen to this, and everybody's going to forget that we're pointing this out, and it seems like a strange thing at this point, because our hindsight gets to be 2020, and you're going to remember saying,
They don't remember what we said 5 years ago, either, or 2002.
Of course I always knew that 3D printers were going to exist everywhere. But the reality is, right now, the vast majority of people don't even know about them. They're not on the radar. If they've heard about it, it's kind of almost a carnival attraction.
Yeah.
Oh, you can make a toy on your desktop. Oh, that's interesting. We're going to be doing everything with that stuff. And that means that there are a lot of people that are working right now doing something that are going to have to find another thing to do, because you're not going to have to put pieces together and bolt them. They're going to get printed already put together with all the moving pieces involved. It's happening slightly at Tesla's plants. But this is, I mean, they're not 3D printing the parts yet. They're just having robots put the parts together. They will be 3D printing the parts. Anyway, we're almost out of time for this hour. We've got a lot more to talk about.
A lot of big, interesting things happening in the economy being discussed at the Jackson Hole meeting. Of course, they're also discussing when they're going to be raising interest rates, but
yeah,
that's a little more practical.
What I meant about the people at the counters checking people out are getting bigger is that every time we go through one of these revolutions, the cost of living, the actual cost of surviving, drops dramatically, and the average income goes up dramatically. So if you look at that, every time we have this wave of changes where people get knocked out of their jobs, the safety nets grow, they get stronger, so that people are not starving to death like the Great Depression. People died from lack of food. The Great Recession, people got bored and were really upset about not having a job.
Yeah.
So we're talking about very different scenarios. And the next time around, hopefully, we're going to continue on that path. But we still have the threat of the imminent danger of us forgetting history and completely taking away a lot of things and repeating it.
Of course we're going to do that.
Well, we may repeat it worse, and I don't want to do that.
No.
I would like to do it better.
We consistently, from century to century, repeat it better. But we do repeat it.
Unless there's places where we repeat it worse. And, the fall of the Roman Empire, we started repeating things in a much worse way, and I'd rather not have to go back to that.
Okay.
We're almost out of time this hour. If you'd like to contact us off the air, there's voicemail waiting, 947-1111 or 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN or our webpage, tpwc.com.
Fair, balanced, your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.